Welcome, everybody. This is Beer Guys Radio. We are happy to be here, and we're happy to have you with us. We like to get together, have a beer, have some conversation, cover the hot topics in craft beer and craft beer adjacent things as well. We do that. Thanks for hanging out. I am Tim Dennis, Brian Hewitt. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Tim?
I'm good. I just said that. I literally just said
oh,
that.
Oh, did you? I wasn't paying attention.
I think I just said my name. Sorry, Brian.
I think
Brian.
You did.
Apologies.
It went through my head. I was like, did he say it? I don't know. I'm just going
to
ask anyway.
We're happy to be here. And I guess that can't. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Nate, how are you doing? And just so we get it out of the way up front, we've already covered how I am doing this week.
Oh, so I shouldn't have to ask you. Okay. I'm doing okay today.
Doing okay. Yeah. A little rough day for Nate. We'll keep that in the private there, but thoughts and prayers and raise a beer to Nate. We got lots of fun stuff to talk about. We were off last week. Some last minute things came up and had a week off. So we're happy to be back in the saddle here. Brian, I'm going to come out of the gate with something that you shared to Twitter earlier this week. And something you've been wanting to do for a while, and you finally got around to it. So we found, and I don't remember who discovered it, but one of us found a pamphlet from Guinness from in the days of yore there. And it mentioned various Guinness cocktails, blends, whatever that there was. But one they had was called a Redhead. And you finally got around to making it, something you've been meaning to make for a while. Tell us about the Redhead, Brian.
So, yeah, it's basically, and there's not a lot of material in it. I think it's called the Guinness Blacklist, and it's from 1976, and it's got vintage, like, 1976 era drawing in it. But there's not a lot of details as to how to make it. It's called the Redhead. It's tomato juice and Guinness. So I got a small can of Campbell's tomato juice, and I got your typical can of Guinness, and I poured both of those into a pint glass, and I drank it, Tim, and... it wasn't great. I'm going to be honest with you.
I was thinking by the wind up there that it was not an awesome beverage, right?
No. And I did have to, it was a little thick and I had to do a little bit of stirring to get it all in there. It turned the Guinness a little kind of rosy looking, which was kind of neat.
Okay.
And so my thoughts were there's potential here. Maybe it's not bad if I'd gone with a different ratio, but I had zero instructions. I did a little bit of Googling and there was very little reference to the Redhead other than like I found one website that has the listing for it from the 1976 thing. And it just says tomato juice. So I added the can. My thought is maybe less of it would work well. Another thought is maybe if I found a lower sodium version of it, because I borderline turning it into a Goza, which wasn't quite right for me. And maybe I need to strain it because there's a little bit of a pulp to that tomato juice. And I did not find that appealing either. So there are many things wrong with this, but I could see a possible way where it might not be horrible, but I don't know if I'm going to try it. I'll be honest with you.
I appreciate that you put a lot of thought into kind of putting a Band-Aid on it for the future there, but there sounds like there's a lot wrong there that just that sounds like maybe not. But now, Brian, you've done Micheladas, and you like those well enough, right?
I do. And I was thinking about it from that when I started to think about it like that. I'm like, this is almost all right when I think about it from that aspect. I think it needed more spices, some more heat or something like that. And I think I usually do the Micheladas with lighter beers. And so this is kind of a...
Yeah.
I got to get it to more of, I don't know, like a mole thing. And I don't think it was quite there. So it wasn't quite where it needed to be in either direction.
Okay.
You know, if you want more spices, I heard Underberg has some good spices.
I was thinking that. I was like, if Nate was around, he could have shot an Underberg in there for you. So
I'm sure that would have made it all better. Yeah.
That would have fixed everything right up. You know, Brian, I think this next beer we're going to talk about here may have been a better pairing for tomato juice or something. So you're familiar with Miller 64?
I am, yes.
So they're rebranding that, Brian, and they're coming out with Miller Extra Light. And interesting turn from them, because if you remember when these beers came out, like Mick Ultra, Miller 64, and that, the big play was lower calories, you know, that they were putting out lower calories, lower carbs, all of this. Well, it sounds like now that the Miller Coors or Molson Coors geniuses believe that ABV, the lighter drinks, are what people are looking for now. So now Miller 64 is rebranding as Miller Extra Light, and the packaging will tout and will highlight the 2.8% ABV instead of the 64 calories. So it sounds like they're going to leave the 64 on there for now for kind of transition period, so people know what they're getting into, but they're eventually going to move it to Miller Extra Light and just really focus on that 2.8%. So interesting, you know, with the talk around NA beers that we've done a lot lately, had some interesting discussions on those and just the lower alcohol. And I'll share more in a minute. Actually, I can now. Totally unintentional with this. It just happened to be the beer that I wanted to get into. But I'm drinking a Jester King La Petite Prince. Le Petit Prince. And that, I believe, is a 2.9%.
Oh, 2.9.
So my Jester King beer competes with that Miller Extra Light. I almost called it. Almost dead named it, Brian. We don't want to be doing that. So
no, we don't.
Yeah, can't be doing Miller that. Extra Light. But what do you think, Nate? What do you think about this, man? Where is the consumer going?
So I would go into a lot of restaurants with my job, and a lot of times I would meet bartenders who don't drink, who just flat out say, you know, I'm working behind the bar, I'm serving people alcohol, I personally do not partake. And it's not just the young folk anymore. There's a lot of people that are my age and y'all's age who are just choosing not to partake anymore, whether they hit it hard in youth and they decided as they got older, you know, I like my quality of sleep. I like not feeling bad for a couple of days after a bender. And so I think Miller pressing into less about the calories and more about, hey, you can, it's not quite a near beer, but it's definitely not, it's lighter than a Bud Light. At 4.5, you know, it's 2.8 versus 4.5%. So I think this is possibly a good move and may reawaken some brand loyalty in Miller Extra Light.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, you know that if any company's putting the money and time into market research and that, it's definitely the companies like, sure, you know, AB InBev, Molson Coors and that. So they may make some bad calls with what they do, but they've done the research to see about where they need to go with.
This is smart. It buys into or leans into, as I hear in the workplace all the time, leans into the whole lower alcohol thing. What do they get? What's brilliant about this is it's low enough that it's almost, you could almost think of this as non-alcoholic, almost. And it does not have the same problems as non-alcoholic beers in terms of like putting them on kegs and the safety issue, because you've got alcohol to buffer.
You've got your alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not, yeah. I know it's not non-alcoholic, but for some people that, especially people that like myself who drink a fair number of Dippas, and I mean that this is effectively like drinking water just about. So it's if you want to go out and have a social beverage without having much of an impact on you, you can get away with drinking several of these. And it's just not going to show up for a lot of people. Now, of course, it depends
now,
on your,
fair warning,
your size and how much you drink. So
yeah. Don't take Brian's advice. These are still alcoholic beverages.
Correct.
They're low alcohol. But, you know, if you're going out, this is not definitely not a substitute for an NA beer. If you're avoiding alcohol for whether medical reasons or Brian, there's, you know, some people that struggle with alcoholism, and even a 2.8 percenter is still going to be an issue for you. But if you're someone that does drink alcohol and you do want to have a few and not get turned, or what were the words we came up with? Gazeboed. If you don't want to get gazeboed,
yeah. You don't want to get gazeboed.
Right. Then you're good to go.
Yeah. You know, the thing is like the lighter beers are hard. I saw a story about the worst to try to go non-alcoholic with, because there's nothing to hide. You need that alcohol to give it the presence. Yeah. And like, this is kind of the play to make if you're going really light lager. Is like really low ABV, but just enough to give it some of that alcohol flavor. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've had one of these, and I don't recall them being amazing. I think it's going to probably wind up being watery, but it's there in case you need that.
It's there,
yeah, for an occasion. So I catch you on the phone, Mike. Go ahead.
I'm reminded, Tim, back when you had your doctor's orders moment of time,
yeah,
and we were talking about Now, under a certain percentage point, beer was actually considered rehydrating. And so I think Miller should just press into that and say, you know, this is the Gatorade of beer.
It was a hydration. Mm-hmm. It was a hydration beverage. That's right. Yeah. Play into it. If you're going to do it, comes with, you know, don't play up that it's low carb. It's got energy giving carbohydrates in it, you know. So there can be all kinds of angles that could work here.
What's the cutoff for that? Is it 2%?
Gives you vim and vigor. Vim and think, vigor there.
I think so. It was anything underneath 5 was considered rehydrating.
That, so Bud Light, 5 seems too high. 4 seems too high. But I'm thinking 2 and under, or maybe 2.5 and under. Maybe that's the point. I think 4 is really stretching it, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you start getting in there. You're going to feel them when you start getting into even a few of those, even when you get around that 5%. Those session beers there.
Yes.
Some news from Georgia, from Atlanta, from Sweetwater Brewing. And for those that remember these, it wasn't that long ago. Unfortunately, not that well received. They launched a gummies line, and they put out a few different flavors in these gummies beers. And love Sweetwater, love the folks over there. But these didn't get rave reviews from a lot of people. They didn't care for the taste, said it was medicinal, cough syrupy and such. But a new thing from Sweetwater, they're going with what we've seen kind of a trend in the family. The family of beers. So if you are in Atlanta or you know anything about Sweetwater, then you know about their 420 Extra Pale Ale, definitely their flagship beer. And I think kind of the unofficial Georgia beer, if you're going to say, you know, this is, or Atlanta definitely is 420. And they've launched the 420 family. So they're going to have 420 Extra Chill, which is a cold pale ale. They'll have the 420 Citrus Haze, a hazy pale ale, Mango Crush, Mango Pale Ale, and of course, they're going to have the OG, the 420 Extra Pale Ale. So, Brian, what do you think about beer families?
I think it's really interesting, and it seems like something that's been made popular by the New Belgium Voodoo Ranger, where they had a hit, and they said, well, we have a hit, now we need a sequel. So this, the family concept in beer is just the sequel idea for movies. So like we have a great intellectual property. Let's add on to that. Let's take all of this and just add more to it and see if we can cash in. That's what it looks like. And it's been an absolute hit for Voodoo Ranger. They're just killing it with that. And we've seen like Bell's Two Hearted. There's a bunch of different hearted, you know, family members. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't remember all of them. I've seen it. I think Mo Mike Nate before the show was talking about Harpoon had done that.
With the UFO line. Yeah.
Yeah. There has been, this is a trend that people don't talk about, but it's kind of like a marketing trend, but we've got ideas for beers, and we have a property that people really, really like. This makes it more approachable. They're like, they see a familiar face on the can and like, well, okay, I trust 420. So I guess I'll try that. Whereas they might not if it had something completely different on it. I guess that's what it is.
I trust 420, so let me give this one a shot.
Now, you better not violate that trust, though. These beers better live up to 420, or you're kind of messing with that intellectual property. So I think it's a little dangerous, but I mean, it's working. So I guess I see why it's happening. I'm going to go try all of these. I definitely will, because I'm curious. And yeah, I would anyway, but...
There was a time when two different Voodoo Rangers were like the number one and number two selling IPAs in C stores
in America.
And that's just
countrywide.
Just not C stores, just in general countrywide, huh?
Yeah.
Crazy, man, to have that. So, yeah, let's see if Sweetwater can pull it off with the old 420. I think, Brian, so the marketing I've seen so far, they showed 6 packs. I really think they should have went with tall boys, at least 16s in this, I think.
Yeah.
Thinking the family going a little larger like that. And I'm pretty sure that Voodoo Ranger, I've seen most of them, and I've seen those a lot, like at convenience stores in the single pack, you know, the little single pack wall, always have some Voodoo Rangers in
there. I've seen those in six pack, the newer expansions on those, the proper 12 ounce cans. But yeah, most of those wind up being the larger formats, because I think that's what made them a thing. I forgot the I bought a mixed pack of the Sierra Nevada torpedoes that were all the different versions that's of right, torpedo. The torpedo family, and I really enjoyed that. So I mean, I guess I'm on board. If you pick the right beer and you do the right things with it, I like the torpedo pack, and we'll see what happens with the 420 pack when I get to try that. And yeah, that's
how many does it take to be a family? Like, would Pliny be a family?
He's got elder, younger, and for president. So,
There are three. I forgot. I was going to say two is a couple, three is when you get to family. So, yeah.
Okay.
Right, Nate. I'm with Nate there. So, you have the Pliny family there.
But are you going to release the for president every year? That's like, that's a special one off. That's like the weird the weird uncle that shows up every,
it's the leap every year couple edition. Of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leap year happens every election year. So, call it the leap year edition.
There you go.
Pliny for president. I would vote for him over the other choices right now. Just
I'd also vote for Turd Ferguson as we
Turd Ferguson. Yeah. Yes,
he's got my vote.
Classic stuff, guys. Let's talk about what we are drinking this week. Brian, you're taking a drink, so I'm going to start with Nate. Nate, what do you have to drink this week?
So in my glass, I currently have from Chilling. I've got their Jacobus. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a German style Pilsner. This is really light, really refreshing, something that I am enjoying having in my glass. I also have out of Bearded Iris. We had ale on a couple weeks ago. So I've got the Ale Max 1, which is an Imperial IPA. I have not cracked into it yet. So Tim, you will hear my full report in a moment.
Okay.
And then I saw in the market today a Trillium collaboration with Halfway Creeks, and it is a premium lager. And I'm really excited to be able to try this.
I did not know that existed. So that is pretty cool. Trillium, Trillium Halfway Crooks. That is pretty awesome. Was it,
it was an anniversary beer. It was an anniversary release by Trillium.
Where did our Red Brick brewer go? Was it Trillium or
Treehouse? Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's because yeah. I was going to be like, okay,
Gavin McKenna.
Gavin. Right. Yep. So, okay. Awesome.
We love you, Gavin. Say hi.
We do. Cheers. Brian, what are you getting into?
So I had a Bitburger Premium Pils to start things off because I love that beer. And I have a, I'm drinking right now a Me from Old Nation. It takes me a while to remember that. So but nice. Yeah, it's a triple New England style IPA. So I really didn't think this through when I was putting it together. It was kind of like, what cool new beers do I have? And that was one of them. And the next one is Weldworks Chocolate Chip Cookie Dough Stout, which is a pastry milk stout.
All right.
That is supposed to be their most, according to their the write-up on it, is their most aggressive or explorative or whatever. They've taken it to the nth degree, and whereas before they had not, and that's what they're doing with that. So I'm excited about that. I've got just the one. I only found one, and can't wait to get into it, Tim.
That sounds interesting. That sounds like something I would like. On your Old Nation, Brian, do you get the me?
In terms of a flavor profile? Well,
no.
I mean,
so the M-I-M-I-M-I.
It's like singing, right? It's like warming up your vocal cords.
I think maybe a double. I don't think double entendre is what the word I'm looking for here. But they're a Michigan brewery.
Yeah. So M-I
is Michigan, Michigan, Michigan. And I was thinking it was like singing, like me. Like
I believe that was probably the play they were going for there.
Gotcha.
So, but I just didn't know if that hit you there.
That slipped past me. I did not get the Michigan angle. Nice catch.
I'm here for you, Brian. Yes. It takes a village.
Yeah, so it does. It does. We'll do that. And there's three of them. That's why it's me. It's a triple IPA. So, I get that part. Yeah.
So much awesomeness going on in such a simple name. Well, y'all, as I mentioned earlier, I have a Texas beer here, Jester King Brewery. I have La Petite Prince, which is a farmhouse table beer at only 2.9%. I've had Le Petit Prince before, and I've made comments that at less than 3% ABV, you will be hard-pressed to get more flavor out of a beer than what Le Petit Prince has. And, you know, you got a little bit of the farmhousey funk to it. There's a slight, I don't even know if it gets tart enough to call it a tartness there, really. Just more of a farmhouse funk, kind of. some minerality in it. Very clean, very easy to drink. I dig this beer. So if you want to go, if you're looking low ABV, you don't have to go for Miller Extra Light. If you can handle a tenth of a percent more alcohol, get you a little Jester King La Petite Prince. Enjoy that because it's good stuff.
So while we were going through that, I did open my L-Max beer. And okay. Tim, I know you want a full report on it. So
tell me about it.
On the can, it says A-Max IPA with Crystal, Citra Incognito, Centennial, Mosaic, and Simcoe. And I got to say, man, I really like Bearded Iris beers, especially their IPAs. And this is phenomenal.
Right in there, huh? Did you have the Monday night version?
No, I did not. I did not get my hands on some. And
I thought I was... Okay, I think we just haven't met up yet to get you cans. We have,
I have some for you. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't had the Bearded Iris version yet, so I don't
I have cans for you boys.
Okay,
as well,
so. We'll work it all out then. We'll get a little side by side action.
There we go. With that.
Yeah, I know the Monday night version was great. Brian, did you have the Monday night one yet?
I did. Yeah, that was quite tasty.
Really
yeah.
nice.
It was enjoyable.
Really yeah. nice. Good stuff. Well, guys, let's give a shout out to our absolutely amazing and phenomenal sponsors. Have been with us for a long time, supporting the show. We don't have a ton of expenses, y'all, especially since we don't have a physical studio anymore. But it does take a little bit to keep things going here, to put pretty graphics on our live stream, to do our post-production software and stuff. So we really appreciate the support of our sponsors. And, of course, Terrapin Brewery Atlanta. One of our favorite breweries in the area. Just really great people there. Always something fun on tap. Baseball season is going again. They've had the home opener. Braves baseball is back. So go out to Truist Park. Visit Terrapin Brewery Atlanta. See what they've got on tap there. You know, they're always tapping something new. They recently had a beer that they did for the Team Heidi event for the Giving Kitchen. They've got their farm series of beers where they check out new hops that you can try in these different beers. They're kind of the laboratory, experimental lab for Terrapin Brewery for the mothership there in Athens, Georgia. So sometimes the new stuff before it goes to package, you can try on tap there at the Atlanta Brewery. Also, if you need a bite to eat, they're right there. Fox Brothers right there, sharing a tap room. Go out, get you some country fried ribs, grab a good beer, have a good time. And thank you so much to Terrapin Brewery Atlanta for supporting Beer Guys.
And I really, really like some of their experimental things. So some of it doesn't make it to the main, you know, mothership of Terrapin.
Right, which is fine.
You need to try it, though. It's because some of it's like kind of niche. So yeah, anyway, you know, it's been a little gloomy lately here in Atlanta, but the sun is coming back just in time to head to your local Truck and Tap and make the most of patio season. It's still here, I think. You don't want to miss any opportunity to take advantage of good weather around here because there's no telling how long it's going to last. Before you know it, it's going to be back up in the 90s and you're going to be pining for the days where you could sit outside and not melt in your chair. I have a special treat for you if you're heading out to Truck and Tap Alpharetta, something I've been really, really looking forward to. It's happened. I'm pleased to announce that the rooftop overproof rum bar is now officially open. So what can you expect from the overproof rum bar, you ask? Well, that is an excellent question, rum. They'll be making over a dozen classic and signature cocktails featuring rum, of course. And we're talking everything from Mai Tais to mojitos to painkillers to pina coladas. And they're going to have some of the finest sipping rums money can buy if you're a rum purist. So they've got both. And if you like tunes while you sip tiki drinks, they will have live music in the evenings as well. And since it's Truck and Tap, you will, of course, have access to some of the finest food trucks in the Atlanta area. A new one every day, not to mention 20 taps of great craft beer. And you can get all the details, including the overproof rum bar menu at truckandtap.com. So get out there, have a Mai Tai, and drink in the patio weather at Truck and Tap. And thank you to Truck and Tap for your support. We appreciate it.
That sounds really nice, Brian. You make it sound so appealing.
Yes, I try my best to. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this rum bar. I'm going to.
Yeah, rooftop rum bar.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. 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 I'm just going to. I don't know if I'll leave. They might have to throw me out. So,
and which may be justified depending on how long you're there. Absolutely.
Let's roll you down the stairs.
Brian, we've done a lot of talking here lately about tinned seafood and Nate just so. I was at work and couldn't do this. So I'm going to throw out there real quick that Keystone Beer partnered with a fish brand called Fishwife, a tin fish brand called Fishwife, and they launched something they called a snackle box that came with a few tins of a smoked trout. And I wasn't able to get it, but Nate was kind enough to place the order for me. It took a while to get it, but Nate got my snackle box. It's bigger than I thought, and it's got some tin fish in it. But Brian, something I realized, we've talked about it. We've thrown, actually, you realized it. Let me give you credit where credit is due. You realized we have talked about this, but we've never really given any recommendations to bring others into the fishy fold. Well, Brian, you're going to change that this week. I believe you have a recommendation for folks on a tinned seafood offer.
Yes, it's an extracurricular pick. It's not beer, but yes. So the thing I'm going to recommend is something I've been eating a lot of lately. It's the Sprouts Market. Sprouts, the actual chain of grocery stores, smoked oysters in red chili pepper. So if you're looking for something interesting to get into and you like seafood, I recommend this. The reason I like these, they're delicious for one. They're big oysters. Like, they're not the tiny little things. They're not funky. They have a really good texture, really good flavor. There's a nice smoke to them. There's some nice heat to them. Here's the great thing is there, if your doctor has told you need to get away from the red meat, and like every doctor is by program to say that by default, including mine, they're a good source of protein. They're a good source of iron. They're actually not a great source of sodium. They're lower than most other tinned seafoods out there. And because they're a store brand, they're inexpensive. So I've gotten them for as little as $2 a tin at Sprouts. But I think they regularly go for $3.50. So I think if you look around, you may find a deal. I think they're great. If you try them and you like them, let me know. If you try them and you hate them, let me know. And if you have a better recommendation than these, let me know and tell me why. So that's it. The Sprouts.
Brian, what beer should folks enjoy with their Sprouts brand smoked oysters with red chili pepper?
You know, I would probably just get a lager. Just a regular American lager. Just nothing too fancy. You don't want them to upscale the oysters. Oysters are so good, and I think it would be perfect. You know.
So something I was thinking, I have to explore this because I don't know, but it's a thought I had. You know, they do oyster stouts, and those flavors do pair well together.
They do.
Maybe a light, like a nitro stout, like a Guinness, like you were talking about. Maybe a Guinness with some of these tinned oysters. It could either work or be absolutely disgusting. You know, one of the two. So maybe,
you know, I don't think the Guinness would be terrible with it because it
that's
is
what I wonder.
Light.
But I do think now, Brian, I've had these before. They're a favorite. Like you said, the price is right on them. For those that haven't enjoyed or experimented with tinned smoked oysters, two problems you can have with them is, one, they're tiny. You know, they just don't have anything going to them. And the texture can be really bad. They can be very grainy and mealy. And these are a little bit bigger and a good texture, which is important, and good flavor. There are oysters, canned oysters, that are bigger and better. But they're literally four times as much for a tin.
That's about right.
You know, I've got a tin over here. I paid $13 for it. The brand is Ekone, Ekone. They're very good, but at the price point, you'll be hard to beat those Sprouts brand smoked.
And if you're like me and heat is a flavor, and heat for me is very much a flavor, these have a nice amount of heat to them. They're not just...
Which is uncommon in tin seafood. They can use that word a little bit generously.
Yes,
talking about it there. So yeah, but awesome. Well, Brian, thanks for the field trip there, the extracurricular, and for actually giving us a suggestion there. Brian, what would you say if I told you that people stopping drinking earlier reduces crime?
I'd say what?
What? That's crazy. Would you believe that? Well, what? I believe you found that there's a study out that suggests that may be the case.
Yeah. According to a study published by the Journal of American Medical Association, reducing alcohol sales times at bars may lead to reduced violent crime, at least in the area around the bars in question. So the study I'm talking about compares crime statistics against 26 bars in Baltimore, Maryland, that reduced their alcohol sales hours from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. down to 9 a.m., to 10 p.m. So they're closing at 10 p.m. instead of 2 a.m. I think that's the important part. I don't know about 6 a.m. starting time. That seems weird, but I feel like not a lot of people are drinking between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. But hey, who am I to judge or know? So they found that there were 23 there was a 23% annual decrease in violent crime when compared to control areas when they did this. They also found that homicide rates dropped 51% in the first month and 40% annually thereafter. So my thought is, I saw this and I'm like, well, I think there's kind of a real obvious question here is, are they actually decreasing crime, or are they just moving, relocating the crime to a different place where drinking is still happening, whether it be at home or another bar?
So, Brian, I think that you're throwing poo-poo into the mix here. You're trying to think maybe of things like, because, yeah, I would say that if they go somewhere else where they could drink later, but I would say that if their point being that, hey, if they quit drinking a little earlier, then it lowers it. In a bubble, I would say, you know, you're probably correct there. That's probably correct. Yes. If they could go over to the next town, the next county, which in all honesty, there's studies out there that show that, you know, dry counties go over and you go over to the next county and they find out there's more DUIs at the county line there. You know, people running to get more beer and doing things like that. Look, I don't like to see controls in place. I like adults to be able to make their own decisions for things that are legal for adults to do. As someone who did stay out till 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m. drinking in my younger days, I can tell you as the night goes on, it gets stupider. And I can tell you that the likelihood of someone theoretically getting mouthy with a bouncer and getting hit in the face with a pitcher becomes more likely the longer the night goes on. So, I mean, I can understand this. You know, if they move the drinking times back a little bit, I do think you're probably correct, Brian, that because it could move it somewhere else. If there's a town over, a bar over, whatever has that you could, they're just going to go there. Because I can tell you when I was younger and I knew that my state quit selling at 11:59 p.m., but then I could drive 15 miles into Missouri and buy till 3 a.m., that there is times between 12 and 3 a.m. that I was headed to Missouri. So, you know, that definitely is a possibility.
I think that unless you control for, like, if you were able to shut it off across the board, it's like, boom, it's done at this point in time. I think that this may actually accomplish what they're looking for. I think it's been a minute since I looked at the study, but I think they were actually gauging the violence by within some number of feet of the actual establishment. And my thought was when I read it, I'm like, if you have a parking lot where every night somebody gets murdered in that parking lot, but then you like put a fence around it and put a guard on it, and nobody's allowed in that parking lot anymore, nobody's going to get killed in that parking lot. You've solved the problem. But like, why were people getting killed in there in the first place? I'm like, are they getting killed somewhere else, or is it just that parking lot's a portal to hell or something? I don't know.
To satisfy you, you would want reports on, say, the next jurisdiction over wherever it was that still had those later. Guys, murders went down 51% here, but 3 miles away, they went up 400%.
Correct. So, but know, if they like really that. Went home and just did no more crimes, I'm like, well, maybe there's something to it. But yeah, we need to, we don't, the study, I don't think establishes that. That's the thing. So I think they said the word suggests in there. And I'm like, well, lightly suggests perhaps. So,
you know what also lowers the risk of that kind of stuff happening? Getting older. And I have done, I've done an over half century study myself and can verify that the older you get, it lowers the likelihood of drinking too late and being stupid. In most cases, not ironclad, Brian, but in most cases.
So would you say, you say your chances of getting hit in the face with a pitcher by a bouncer are considerably lower now than they were when you were 25?
You're saying just hypothetically, right?
Hypothetically.
Yes, hypothetically, yeah. definitely a lower chance.
Okay.
Hypothetically speaking. So the chances hypothetically of running my mouth to a bunch of guys at a stoplight and getting punched in the mouth, also much lower, hypothetically, just saying. So, yeah, I, you know what, Brian, in all honesty, I think it probably stands to reason if people stop drinking earlier, they're probably going to be drinking less, and it's probably going to lower the fact. We know that too much alcohol gets people acting stupid. But, you know, good question. Does it relocate it? Does it move? Does it migrate? You know, what's going on there? But I guess in a bubble, in a vacuum, as they would say, the statement is probably true.
if it becomes difficult enough to get that next beer, you will go home and possibly do the not do the bad thing. So yeah. If they really have to go to a different county and drive 30 minutes there, they might say screw it and go home and then pass out at home. So there's a real possibility this will work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know.
So, Brian, let me ask you this. You are in the day job. You're a software developer, a coder, whatever term that you program or whatever term you want to use, correct? AI is out there. It's come in so many places. Are you using AI in your job, your day job yet?
I do. I do a fair amount. I use it to because I write code, and sometimes I'm working with a tremendous amount of different libraries and approaches to doing things. Sometimes I will ask AI to write me a function that does a particular thing, or looking for a different way of doing it, or sometimes I'll ask it to generate some data for testing purposes. I've done both. And I've also gotten it to summarize design concepts and things like that. Like if somebody throws out a concept that seems like it's like I need to read a book to understand this, I'll say, hey, AI, give me a summary of what this thing is so I have an idea of what they're talking about. And it's very useful for that.
It is. And that's I think I mentioned it before, but I'm a recruiter in my day job and I use it a lot. It helps me, reword resumes or job descriptions, and it helps me give summaries of candidates. A neat feature that I found out with it the other day is when you have a meeting like in Microsoft Teams, it will record the transcript and you can tell it. It's built into Microsoft called Copilot. I don't know if you've used that yet, but we're using Copilot. But after a meeting, you can say, give me a summary of the meeting. It'll tell you who said what, and then it'll give you action items and all that, which I was amazed with how accurate it was on the meeting. And this was a long meeting. It was an hour long, presentation. And I'm like, wow, that's impressive. But, we use it for the show. It helps us to create graphics and different things. The point being, Nate, have you mucked with AI much yet?
I honestly haven't. I've actually been trying to avoid it a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. That's and I know it's not everybody doesn't get into it or have a need for it or even have a need or desire to mess around with it. But what it can do now is pretty impressive. But you do run into some things where you realize the limitations and it can really make some big mistakes too. So you still have to verify what's going on. But all of that to say, no job, no task is totally out of the harm's way or out of the eyes of AI. And with that said, Brian, you found some stuff that said AI is even coming for the Brewers jobs, right?
Yeah. So there's a little bit of a clickbaity article out there that says that AI is coming for the Brewers job. Well, the reality of the story is perhaps a little different now, but we'll see what happens in the future. So according to some published research in the journal Nature, researchers were able to create an algorithm they say outperforms predictions based on conventional statistics and accurately predicts complex food features and consumer appreciation from chemical profiles. So basically that means AI will be able to tell you if your beer is going to be a hit or not with the public.
Okay.
It beats all the other models for doing this. They accomplished this by training a learning machine or machine learning models on extensive chemical and sensory analyses, of 250 different beers. For each beer, they measured over 200 different chemical properties. They did a sensory analysis with a trained tasting panel of human beings, real human people, I believe. And they mapped that data over 180,000 consumer reviews. So my guess is if you've used Untappd or reviewed a beer on Beer Advocate, you've probably helped train this AI model without knowing it. And maybe you're entitled to compensation. I'm sure lawyers will be telling you that soon. At the moment, the model does not seem to be creating recipes, only predicting the customer appreciation levels of the finished product based on chemical analysis. A couple of the interesting findings that were listed in the article, protein levels, ethyl acetate, ethyl phenyl acetate, and lactic acid are all important drivers of beer appreciation. So the levels of those will really determine how people respond to your beer. Interestingly, ethanol was reported as unnecessary in improving beer appreciation, at least in the case of blonde ales and non-alcoholic beers. So that's interesting. Like the actual perception of alcohol is not important for blonde ales, but also non-alcoholic beers, which makes sense for non-alcoholic beers. So that's fun. It's really interesting what's going on here. I can't even imagine a point in time where the robots are actually coming up with the recipes.
I mean, so there are some examples of robots coming up with recipes, because as it comes to bartenders and cocktails, there are a number of bartenders that will like feed a couple of metrics in and AI will generate a cocktail recipe. They're not always great, but some of them actually are really tasty.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. They did in the early days of AI come up with the campaigns where they would come up with the advertising campaigns. They'd feed in a bunch of information into the AI models, but it was all kind of a crapshoot. It's like a predictive based upon what they'd seen online of other recipes that have been created, like maybe like in a homebrew talk or something like that, where it's been published. So I think it was just kind of a randomized selection of elements that it saw commonly together.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things they talk about having to look at patterns and things that says, I think it was, there was some band that said that they analyzed like the top songs for the last 20 years and put, and man, I wish I could remember who it was, because they ended up putting a song out based on what they'd looked at there, and it was a hit. I forget what it was, but I think maybe it was Party Rockin' or something.
Yes. LMFAO.
Yeah. LMFAO. Yeah. I think that was.
Does that sound right? Did you hear that? Did you hear that as well?
I think so. I don't know if it's an urban legend, but like analyzed popular songs and put them together and created like crazy hits from them. I think that's right.
Interesting. But AI is pretty fascinating. There's certain things that I do right now that instead of going to Google, I go to Gemini, is Google's AI. And there's questions that you would search on Google and have to funnel through results to get what you're looking for. But you just ask Gemini in plain English and it gives you the results. And it's usually what it's looking for. But again, limitations. It gets things wrong. It messes up things. The other day I was having it reformat a job description for me, and the job listed all the duties, the requirements, the salary, the hybrid schedule and all that. And one thing that the job said was you will be required to travel in the field like up to 20% of the time. And it said salary is this and there is bonus potential. Well, it automatically put in there. It took the 20% and the bonus and put it together. And it's like, this is your salary and you get an automatic 20% bonus. It's like, no, you do not, AI. That is not correct. So, yeah, it doesn't always interpret everything just right, but it's impressive what it can do.
You got to check the robot's work. And I've gotten in the habit with certain things, especially if the results are not quite up to snuff. And sometimes even if they are, I'll ask both. I'll chat GPT and Google Gemini both. And I've gotten very different and interesting results. And in some cases, one is better. Clearly better than the other, and sometimes the two together are a great result, but one by itself is not. So
we have to be careful because the robots are literally everywhere now.
Right? They are. Yes. Mm.
Yeah. We got to watch out for that. We got to watch out for that. Brian, some other interesting info you found earlier this week that we were not sure if it was a promise or a threat, but research says a lot. I've found out it has a lot to say about
it. Yes.
But a recent study suggests that couples that drink together and have the same drinking habits tend to live longer.
That's right. If they have the same drinking habits, theoretically they live longer when compared to couples or where only one of the partners drinks or where none of them drink. So if they're both teetotalers, that they are still behind in the rankings here. So they studied 4,656 couples, all of them 50 years and older, and they did not take into account how much they drank. So that's a kind of an interesting, possibly telling thing there. Presumably at 50 plus, you're drinking less than you might have at 25. But apparently it all comes down to if those surveyed said they had a drink within the past 3 months or not. If they both said yes, both parts of the couple, they tended to live longer. If they didn't, one of them didn't, they did not. And it's not known yet as to why this might be the case. Why is this a correlation? There's definitely not a causation situation going on here. But in a prior study conducted by the same people in 2017, they also found an association between drinking together and staying together. So you drink together, you stay together, and you live longer, apparently, according to science.
This is trash. Your study is trash, Brian.
It probably is, yes.
You're talking about the study earlier about fighting and that. Are you telling me that the criteria of this study is they just asked people, have you drank in the last 3 months?
That appears to be what
Get
it is.
Out of here. Take that trash and go.
I choose to believe this garbage study and question here's the other thing. Garbage study.
Yeah. Let's look at you and Mrs. Hewitt. And if they ask that question, you both could say yes. But Uma is going to be like literally one whole drink maybe in the last 3 months where you've literally drank five times that in the last hour probably. So that's the variance we can have in a 3 month time. But so seriously, in a 3 month time period, Brian, you've probably had 40 or 50 beers.
I mean, it's possible. Who knows? Nobody's
counting. Uma's probably had one, right?
Yeah. Two? Well, it depends on, you know, like drinking, tasting, having part of a cocktail.
That's why I'm going up to two, Brian. So maybe let's say three.
Possibly as many as two.
So those are the variables you could have, and both could still answer in the affirmative. So I don't know that I would call that having the same drinking.
So maybe
why do you bring this trash to the show, bro?
Maybe if I drink more, I can account for her not drinking nearly as much.
Yeah,
I think that might work.
I think that's how it works. I'm just saying,
trying to live to 130.
That's right. Yeah, I'm doing my best. This study does not support my living a very long time. I understand that. Okay. I'm a little nervous. Fair enough. At the same time, it's pleasant junk, but this is a junk study.
That's okay. Okay.
It got a lot of attention. So
you know what? I will say though, usually there's a little bit more to it than did you have a drink in the last 3 months? So, you know, that's
I think that they use that same foundation for determining if you were likely to stay together. If you both said yes, you likely were going to stay together. If you didn't, you were not likely to stay together. I think that's kind of the basis.
That is one loose study. All right.
It is.
All right.
I'm going to say I read an article that summarized it. I did not read the study myself because I'm just not that able to understand what these studies do.
You are in it for the clickbait, right?
Oh, it totally was. This is definitely clickbait. Yeah, for sure.
Fair enough. Well, Brian, some big news. D9 Brewing Company, which for those that may not be familiar exactly with D9 Brewing, also known as District 9 Brewing, you have likely heard us on here talking about Bevana Partners. And we had Aaron Gore on from Bevana a few years ago. Aaron has left Bevana Partners since that time. Bevana has a lot of drama around them with breweries they've partnered with and not delivering that. Well, the parent company of Bevana Partners is also the parent company of D9, and the founder of both D9 and Bevana is the same person. D9 Brewing has filed for bankruptcy. And there's a lot of news that's going around. And of course, people are saying, hey, this has got to be the nail in the coffin for Bevana. Not necessarily. They're separate companies falling under the same umbrella. You know what? With that said, I'll say there's rumors going around that contradict that, but I'm not going to repeat them because they literally are internet forum rumors now that I have no validation for. But Brian, you looked up the details on this. What is going on? What are the particulars with D9?
Yeah. So, like you said, I think there were rumors back when we were talking about issues with Bevana being in the news and being sued and all that. There were rumors that D9 might have been on the verge of filing for bankruptcy at the end of last year. That turns out to probably be true now, because I think if there were rumors then and it happened now, they were probably right. According to the court filing, and it's Chapter 11 bankruptcy, to be clear. According to the court filing, D9 has between 50 and 99 creditors. So I guess we're selecting ranges on a survey. Yeah. And they have between $100,001 and $500,000 in assets, but they owe between $1,001,000 and $10 million in liabilities, which is a very wide range.
For what it's worth, Brian, I believe these are brackets on a bankruptcy filing. So I believe that is the reason for these weird numbers there.
Yeah. I figured. I don't think these are being reported freely from them. It's definitely like we're getting court filings.
How many creditors? 50, 100.
Like, is that 50 or is that 99?
78.
You know?
Yeah.
So D9 says they're doing this to address the brewery's quote unquote historical debts and the struggles that they've had and everybody's had since COVID. So that has made a dent in everybody's sales. They do not actually plan to close the brewery. I think that they're thinking they can turn things around and get things back on track with D9. So that's where that's at. But it's interesting because of all of the drama we've already seen about Bivana Partners and because we already saw hints and rumors about this potential bankruptcy coming. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I'm very curious to see how they're going to pull this out, really.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be interesting. There's just a lot going on right now with all the stuff going on over there with D9 and with Bivana. And so, you know, to see how all that shakes out, what really does happen. It sounds like that maybe ownership isn't as honest and forthcoming with some things. Maybe they did believe in things. Now, we had the D9 guys on probably 5 years ago or more back when we first launched the show. I'd say within our first year, so maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we had them on. We had a lot of fun with them. Now they came, you know, they had a huge, one of the biggest coolers I've seen full of beer. They brought it to the studio. We had a good time in that, but, you know.
We buried a body in that after the fact.
We did. We buried somewhere between 50 and 99.
That's right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to have some fun this weekend. So is this show, if you're watching the live stream, then of course, you know, you're hearing this now. If you're podcasting, this will release Saturday. As this releases, we're going to be on our way to Duluth, Georgia for Little Beer Fest, a really great festival. This is, I believe, the third year for the festival, I think. Fourth? Is it fourth?
I think
already?
It's four. Yeah, it's Little Beer Four.
Wow, yeah. Little Beer Four. We've been at all of them, and we've experienced heat waves and snow. It's been all over the place, so it'll be fun to see. I think last forecast I saw, it was supposed to be mid-70s, mid to upper 70s and sunny. So we'll see if that can hang out, because it looked to be a really nice day.
Tornadoes. For I'll pack my parka and my sunglasses both.
Yeah, probably a safe bet, but that's a good time, man.
Yeah.
Some low ABV beers, some good people to hang out with, so that's going to be a good time. Guys, anything else to add or share? Nate, you got anything?
No, I think I'm good. I'm looking forward to Little Beer Fest this weekend. It's going to always a good showing.
It's going
to
be
over
there
in Duluth, and so really excited to go out and experience.
It'll be a fun time. Brian, did you get to your crazy pastry stout?
No, I didn't. Okay. You know what? I got busy. Right. It's still. I'm going to get into it in a bit, but
I was curious. Yeah. Weldworks does really nice stouts. You know, they're known for like juicy bits and all of those, but their stouts are good too. So I imagine
top tier. Yeah,
that is pretty tasty stuff. Awesome. We definitely appreciate you coming over here and hanging out with us this week. We hope that you have a great one. Enjoy the spring weather, some baseball, some beer. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, and don't forget to drink local. Cheers.